Hello and welcome back to this episode of Debt Wired, where we break down everything debt-related with expert insights. I'm your host, Melina Khalkia, and today we're turning our attention to the skies, and that means aviation finance. Joining me today is Ben Millard, Director in the Transportation Department at SMBC Americas. SMBC has been a key player in aviation lending for a long time. From loyalty-backed loans to aircraft CLOs, they've been at the center of some of the most innovative deals in the sector. In this episode, we'll be talking about how airlines are managing debt post-COVID, why mileage programs have become prized collateral, and what trends investors should be watching in the aviation, ABS, and CLO markets. Ben, thanks for being here.
Melina, thank you for having me today.
Well, I'm excited to hear your thoughts. You're an expert on this. So let's dive right in. Commercial aviation has been front and center lately. We had a post-COVID travel boom and more recently a string of aircraft incidents making headlines. But how is that turbulence playing out in the debt markets? Are airlines leaning back into capital raising or are they staying cautious?
It's a great question, Melina. Yeah, I would say staying cautious is a current tone that we're seeing on our side in the primary debt market for our major airlines clients, and it's definitely not demand related. We've seen very strong demand in spite of with the recent turbulence, as you accurately say. Year to date, you've only had two really big public airline deals for debt raising, which is American Airlines did a loyalty bond, as you referenced. They raised $1 billion out of their AA Advantage loyalty program. That was back in May. And you also had Delta raise about $2 billion of senior unsecured notes just last month. In both cases, this was not really new debt incurrence so much as it was managing their maturity skylines. Specifically, they were looking at maturing debt in the next year, using what are very conducive debt markets now with a lot of enthusiasm from the primary investors to, again, manage their debt skylines. I think that's the primary reason issuance has been selective. Airline treasury departments are deprioritizing new leverage over considerations very much for the rating agencies. And just last week, you had United Airlines announce that they have used cash on hand to redeem in full $1.5 billion of senior secured notes backed by their Mileage Plus program. That program is now fully unencumbered. And again, that's a great story when they talk to the rating agencies about potential upgrades.
So you mentioned a couple of deals there, the American Airlines one as well, the mileage-backed deal, which DebtWire actually reported on recently. We've seen many airline structured financings like these recently. What's driving this trend where non-traditional collateral is kind of starting to become mainstream in aviation debt?
Another great question. Two main takeaways for the DebtWire listeners, specific to mileage programs. They're incredibly lucrative franchises. They throw off substantial cash for the airlines via the pre-sale of miles from their program partners. And this is typically very sustainable cash flow growth for any airline. The dollar level of pre-sold miles in a given year typically can be up to twice the level of corresponding redemptions that the airline is forced to make each year. Meaning, again, you have very sustainable, positive cash flow generation. The other point I'd like to make is that structurally, these are airtight. The entirety of the program assets, these are client agreements, licenses, intellectual properties. These are carved out of the airline and placed into offshore SPVs with the miles cash flows pledged to repay bondholders first. Therefore, this ensures a very smooth enforcement process and the very unlikely, in my opinion, scenario where the airline were to file and the program assets would be restructured in any kind of restructuring at the airline. So again, two very good positive stories for debt holders.
So it's almost like these programs have kind of become the crown jewels of airline credit in a way, right? Do you think we'll see financings lean even more heavily on them going forward?
I think over time, yes. These, again, are proven bond offerings and Term Loan B offerings. So the investor base is very much there in the future. I think near term, you're not going to see a lot of new money lending in the current year. And I would go back to the first point that I made really around the major airlines prioritizing the credit ratings. And I think the action that United took recently to repay the senior secured notes backed by their mileage plus assets is very much a harbinger in terms of the direction that the airlines are going. I think they'd much rather point to some unencumbrance in these programs, meaning that they would have future debt capacity, so to speak. That's always a very positive rating agency discussion versus additional leveraging that you might see out of these programs. But having said that, I'd say these are here to stay, and they're going to be vehicles for the airlines to finance new debt over many years.
Let's talk about your strategy. How has SMBC changed its strategy to kind of capture these new financing opportunities, especially with airlines that maybe tapped out on traditional secured debt?
Again, if the airlines are not raising new money, then we do tend to look elsewhere. Our team is very much in the solutions business, and I think we also cover the major airline lessors on our team. That's an area that I focus on, particularly with the non-recourse lending, where I spend a lot of my time. With this set of clients, we regularly engage to understand their business needs and devise solutions for even the smallest pinch points within their funding. A couple of recent examples that we've seen for the aircraft lessors. One of them is a standby revolving credit facility, unsecured. This was structured right on top of a warehouse structure. So a little bit of mix of fully recourse and non-recourse. The purpose of the RCF was to bridge equity contributions from the warehouse drawings to the ABS term out. And this facility provided the client with very valuable flexibility around the timing of when to issue the ABS. These ABS, while they're very popular and in the new issue market and well bid, they typically have a very tight launch window. So having this RCF in place gives them a lot of flexibility in terms of their cash needs. And that's a solution that we were able to provide. Second example, we structured and arranged a non-recourse debt facility for a portfolio sale. This is for an aircraft leasing company looking to get younger with their owned fleet. And in this particular case, we arranged the debt, which was about 80% of the cap structure, then also found an equity participant for the remaining 20%. The airline's typical fleet age goes anywhere from 4 to 7 years. And so they picked a portfolio of what I would call midlife aircraft, which are in the 10 to 15 year age range. At this age, the required ownership costs are typically greater. Therefore, the lessor is motivated to sell. And actually, the sale timing in this case is quite good because there's quite an interest now amongst investors in purchasing and owning and leasing new metal. So again, this was sort of a well-timed transaction, both for the leasing company, for the equity, and for us.
That's really interesting. And obviously, you work a lot on these types of deals. But aviation, ABS, and CLOs still feel niche to some investors. So for those used to corporate ABS and CLOs, what's similar and what's fundamentally different about these aviation securitizations?
That's a great question, Melina. And I just would point to three fundamental differences that you have from what I would call plain vanilla ABS and CLOs. The first is the investor base makeup. The aviation ABS and CLO investors tend to be highly specialized in the equipment. They're bid by institutional investors who have deep sector knowledge and seasoning, and these are really prerequisites to holding the structures, frankly. Second point is available spread. This tends to be much higher at the same rating points versus maybe your traditional plain vanilla ABS CLOs. We just point to the recent PK issuance, which was done in May of this year, the Class A's, which were offered by PK. They printed at 160 basis points over. This was for split rated, but AAA and AA rated paper. So again, very compelling spread pick. The third point I would raise is market liquidity. That tends to be much lower. I think you can just point to a smaller universe of dedicated traders to make markets in the paper, meaning very much these are geared for buy and hold accounts. The basic structure is very similar to what you would look at in any kind of ABS. There's some nuances that I'll just touch upon briefly. These will have like a diversification test. And the real risk that you have with any aircraft pool is what I would call tail risk. And because you have a servicer, and that's typically an entity like a PK, you want there to be sort of a clean asset pool and to prevent any kind of potential cherry picking of, call it like, the good assets within the pool. And keep in mind, one or two suboptimal aircraft or aircraft loans and even a large size pool in an ABS or CLO can really dent the performance. The other kind of bespoke feature are have to do with maintenance reserves, which really protect the metal value, metal meaning the aircraft. And so these structures will have required top-ups that are senior in the performing waterfall. Maintenance reserves are critical as the pledged aircraft are flown during the facility tenor, since required heavy maintenance tends to be very lumpy cash outflows. And again, just to reiterate, this is a lender protection.
And I want to touch a little bit more on PK Air Finance, the deal which you just mentioned. Can you walk us through how a platform like that originates aviation debt and what role banks like SMBC play in the process?
That's a great question, Melina. Bottom line is that aircraft loan CLOs have highly compelling investment attributes, and we have seen investors flock to these in the most recent CLO issuances. We consider these to be a strong growth driver of our own business. Aviation CLOs are utilized by what I would call alternative aviation lending platforms, the largest one being PK Air Finance, as I mentioned before. They were formerly known as GECAS, which is part of GE Capital. It's now owned by Apollo Global. To be clear, SMBC does not view these alternative lenders as direct competitors to our own aviation lending book. Rather, we view them as really compelling and strong partners for what I would call back leveraging. And this is really just a term for securitizing the alternative lenders' loan origination that gets bundled into CLOs. There's a strong preference amongst these lenders to do this. With the back leveraging, it frees up new capital for new origination, new trading, or portfolio acquisitions. And again, a bank such as ours plays a key role in this process.
Zooming out, do you see aviation ABS issuance continuing to grow? Would you say we're still in the early innings of this market?
I absolutely think we're in the early innings for growth for aviation CLOs and the related warehouses. Of course, that's contingent upon the markets remaining conducive, which they have been. It's a relatively new product, the first publicly rated CLO price in October 2021. So we're not even at the four-year mark. You have healthy interest from banks like ours, buy-side investors who I've mentioned, and also the sponsors, which are a host of alternative asset managers, private equity firms, and they are backing both established and younger alternative lending platforms. The new issue, 8 aircraft CLOs have shown compelling spread pick. They are very well-structured transactions. For aircraft ABS, we foresee a continued strong pipeline of new deals this year and favorable primary market trends. For example, Carlisle Aviation's last ABS, on which we were a joint lead bookrunner, this priced in June. This was a two-tranche deal. This demonstrated a full retracing of spreads versus the prior Carlisle Aviation ABS, which had priced in February. And what it really showed on the last deal is no post-Liberation Day hangover from a primary market standpoint. So again, you really have a ton of investor demand for this paper.
To your point on Liberation Day, has the threat of tariffs or any geopolitical tension shown up in the cost or structure of these aircraft financings, especially for non-US manufacturers like Airbus? Or should we expect it to have an impact?
It's another good question. We have not seen really any impact. Without commenting on the politics, there is some discussion around potential tariffs on Airbus-manufactured aircraft if the U.S. were to decide to do that. I think it would be very tricky, frankly, to pull off to enact these tariffs. The reason is that Airbus, much like its competitor Boeing, they are the final assembly only at this stage. They've offloaded a lot of the actual heavy manufacturing that goes into the airframe. Sort of a good example is Airbus's A350 aircraft, which is a wide-body jet, and it's a clean sheet. It's one of their new technology jets. The center fuselage is actually built by a U.S. company, Spirit AeroSystems, and then the composite materials that go into the fuselage are manufactured by a U.S.-based company as well, Hexcel Corporation. So again, I think enacting the tariffs is going to be a very tricky exercise for the U.S. to do.
And of course, we should talk a little bit about restructurings in this industry. And outside the U.S., we've seen some distress situations like Azul in Brazil. What do restructurings in the aviation space typically look like?
I would say that timing and luck play a major role in airline restructuring outcomes, both for the debtors, meaning the airline, and also the lenders and bondholders. Of course, the last major wave of restructurings that you had was 2020, 2021, in COVID's unfortunate wake. You had multiple non-US majors like LATAM Airlines, Aeromexico, and Avianca all file for bankruptcy. And they actually chose to file for bankruptcy under US Chapter 11, as have Azul, who you mentioned. One advantage to any airline filing in the U.S. is you have a large body of case law for debtors that can be relied upon and relied upon by the large U.S. law firms, legal advisors. These are in terms of levers that the airline in bankruptcy can potentially pull to more efficiently restructure. One example is Section 1110 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code, and this will allow any airline to very efficiently discharge certain of their secured financing obligations where they may choose to not have certain aircraft in their post-emergent fleeting plan. LATAM definitely did that in their 2020-2021 bankruptcy case, and this was for the A350 aircraft. The other point I would make is that airlines have an 18-month exclusivity period to form a reorganization plan in U.S. Chapter 11. This would be over competing constituencies, such as the Unsecured Creditors Committee. There's generally an advantage to filing in U.S. courts over non-U.S. courts.
That makes sense. And once these airlines emerge from restructuring, how do they typically re-enter the capital market? Are lenders willing to re-engage quickly?
I think they are in general. It's going to depend again on sort of how quickly the post-petition lending group forms. And that will be very much a function of whether the airline forms a credible plan of reorganization that becomes acceptable to creditors. I think we saw that recently with the Spirit Airlines restructuring. I would call it a relatively clean restructuring. With my experience, I have not necessarily seen creditability gaps among the airlines. In fact, debt investors tend to have short memories in this industry. The bank groups can be largely unchanged post-emergence, even if they've actually lent large money to the airline pre-filing. I think the other point I'd make is that the emergence debt security packages for emergence financings generally are quite compelling, typically an all-asset style financing rolled from the DIP, and senior secured financings pledged by critical assets, such as the mileage program, which you mentioned before. Another form of financing which is popular are slots, grades, and routes. These are for airlines that fly into slot-restricted airports, such as London's Heathrow and New York's JFK. So again, this is all very well-proven collateral for a post-petition banking group to rely upon from a creditor standpoint.
And looking ahead, what's the one trend in aviation credit that you think debt investors should be paying more attention to this year?
That one, I would say whether the Enhanced Equipment Trust Certificate, which I will refer to now as EETC, financing, whether that's going to return as a widely used tool by the global airlines to finance both new and used fleet. I would call them quasi-structured financings, and they're very useful for airlines with large fleeting needs. All of the U.S. airlines now have fairly large order books with both Boeing and Airbus. It's a highly efficient mechanism to pre-fund multiple aircraft deliveries, and that can actually be done over a 12 to 18-month forward period, which is very useful for airlines' treasury groups. I think what's particularly useful is the most senior tranche typically achieves a 6 to 9 notch uplift over the airline's credit rating, meaning an airline that is firmly high yield is able to tap a mid-investment grade investor base. The most recent high watermark that we had for EETC issuance was just immediately following COVID, I believe around 7 to 8 deals priced in 2021. Since that time, however, the market has been very selective. And I think one common complaint that we've heard amongst our aviation debt market investors is that you've only seen about one deal come to market. There's definitely healthy market appetite. And I think hopefully more than one airline chooses to test that market this year, crossing fingers.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Ben, it's been a pleasure talking with you. You gave some great expert insights.
Melina, thanks so much for having me. It was a lot of fun and enjoyed the conversation.
Definitely, me too. I think you're one of the best people to talk to about this for sure. And thank you to our listeners for checking out this episode of Debt Wired. As always, you can subscribe or download every episode via Apple and find thousands of articles with insights, research, and more from our team at DebtWired.com. See you next time.